so was I, at first. That another example of the cult of the hideous on earth, the rule being, if possible, always choose the ugly. Oh, come, Monsignor, things aren't altogether as bad as that. Not far from it, then. You know what those words mean, if not? They've been conveniently translated for you. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of goodwill. Note the last, Roger. Different from what you are used to, perhaps, on earth. It's the better rendering, because I mean so much more. Peace, my dear boy, will never come to the folk of earth without there is goodwill first. If there were universal goodwill, there would be universal peace. If anyone doubts it, let it be tried. The light you see might be going either way, might it not, but as it happens it is ascending. It came about in this way. This whole building with its gardens, was originally put up by the folk living hereabouts to serve as a pleasant place to receive the numerous teachers, and so on, who come from time to time from the higher realms to help us in a multitude of ways. Hence the chairs there, where the altar stone would normally be. The principal visitor will occupy the central chair, as you would guess, while the others would be taken by those who come with him. Look round you, and what do you see, or rather, what don't you see? Roger turned about him, no memorials on the walls, he enumerated, no religious pictures, no hymn board, no candles or other ornaments. In fact, it's just the empty shell of a church, but with comfortable chairs instead of hard pews. The side windows were also of colored glass, and the rays of light passing in upon both sides produced the most delicate rainbow tints that met and mingled. Those two texts that you see, were put there at the express wish of the folk who were responsible for the whole building. As with the rest of us here, they have a wholesome horror of war, the most detestable scourge that ever could assail the people of Earth. So they tried to think of some way in which to show their general concern, and at length they hit upon the scheme of taking that familiar quotation and emblazoning it upon the walls, right behind and above those high visitants when they are seated there, and in full view of every person as soon as he enters. They had it worked in mosaic, exquisitely, as you can see, in those bright colors, and made of it a permanent prayer by their thoughts. That is what you see ascending in that light, and it is never allowed to grow weak or feeble. You will always find it bright and strong. An infinitely small drop, my dear fellow, in an immense ocean of good thoughts, powerful enough in its way, though not powerful enough to stop or prevent war. You will have seen by now, Roger, that in these lands nothing is left undone merely for want of trying. Whatever the outcome of any enterprise, however hopeless it may seem from the start, yet an attempt will be made. We have our failures, and we have our successes too. War, my boy, is a large subject, and not a cheerful one, especially to you who are sampling the delights of the spirit world. Ruth and I don't want to depress you. You won't do that, Monsignor. I like to know things, even if they're not too pleasant. At the west end of the building there was a deep narthex upon which was reposing a large organ. It wasn't an instrument of advanced design or construction, and the pipes were arranged in their conventional order. A nice instrument, Roger. Anyone who wishes is at liberty to play upon it. Come along upstairs, and examine it, and perhaps Ruth will play us a tune. We mounted the stairs, and found ourselves in a wide gallery. There can't be electricity here, so would you like me to pump for you, Ruth? Roger suggested. There's no need to do that, thank you, my dear, said Ruth. You are right about our not having electricity. We have something much better. She pointed to a box-like receptacle on the floor a short distance from the organ. In there, said she, is all we require. All I have to do is set that little machine in motion, and the air is sent along the trunk to the instrument. Yes, but what makes the machine go? Thought, Roger, thought, that's all, answered Ruth with a smile. You know, you've hardly any notion yet what thought can really do. No, I'm beginning to realize that. Ruth seated herself at the manuals and played a short piece that had been especially composed for her by one of our master musician friends, a light, frolicsome little work, rather in the nature of a scherzo. When the final note had sounded, Ruth left the organ seat, and taking Roger by the arm said, "Now come and see what we have done." We left the building, and observing Ruth and myself gazing upwards above the roof, Roger did the same and was astonished to see, high up over the building, a huge sphere like a bubble, gently rotating upon its axis. Its colors, a delicate blue and pink, interweaved themselves without losing their identity. "We should move a little farther away," I said, "then Roger will see the full effect. At present we're too much under it." We took up a position about a quarter of a mile distant where the full effect was superb. To Roger it was somewhat awe-inspiring to see this apparently fragile form suspended in the air with no visible means of support. "All music, Roger, makes a form of some kind when it is performed," Ruth said, "no matter what instrument it is played upon, though if I had played that piece on the piano, we should not have got such a large one as that. But we should have made a form. Perhaps not as lovely. I've never played that piece on the piano, so I can't say what exactly would have happened. It was written for the organ, where one can get sufficient volume and variety of tonal effect. It's very beautiful, isn't it?" "You know, Ruth," said Roger, "that's more frightening, even, than anything I've seen so far, though frightening isn't what I mean really." "No, old fellow, I know it isn't. I suppose awe-inspiring is the right term. It is a peculiar emotion, whatever one calls it. Ruth and I both felt the same when we first experienced it, and even now we have not entirely grown out of it. I don't believe we ever shall. I hope not. If we did fail to respond, there would be something wrong somewhere, and it wouldn't be the fault of the music. No, there's no question about it. We shall always feel some deep emotion whenever we hear and see music written by such masters as we have here, and they're masters, Roger." The lad was looking at Ruth with something like deep admiration, a kind of heroine worship, one would say, that she should be able to achieve such a remarkable feat. For her part, Ruth was amused, and not a little touched by the lad's warmth of feeling, but she hastened to wave aside any credit to herself. "What I've done is nothing, Roger. Anyone who can play can produce the same result. A mechanical instrument could do it. But no mechanical instrument could compose the music. That's where the credit must go, to the composer." "Did I understand you to say that a master musician wrote the piece especially for you?" "That is perfectly correct, Roger. Another surprise? It shouldn't be, you know, because, if you come to think of it, all those famous composers who have died, must be somewhere, mustn't they?" "Yes, of course, that's rummy. I never thought of that." "Ah," I remarked, "I suppose that's because most folk regard musical composers as being only half human, if even that. That's why so many of them were half starved when they lived on Earth. When they left it, the people suddenly remembered them, and put up statues and monuments to them, and their works suddenly became very valuable. Things are a trifle better now on Earth, and a composer need not actually starve, but if he has written some really good things, they will be much more valuable after he's dead. At the present moment, the earthly geniuses are notable by their absence. The real geniuses are all here. You've had an example, this minute, of the real genius. Even without being able to see that piece, it is a delight merely to listen to it." "How long will that ball remain there?" Roger asked. "Normally," Ruth told him, "it would fade in a moment or so, but Monsignor and I put our thoughts together to charge it with a little more permanence so that you could see it in all its glory. When there are orchestral or other works following one another quickly, if the form stayed too long, they would all be mounted in a jumble on one another, and their shapes would be lost." 9. A question of age. "There's one thing that puzzles me," declared Roger. "Only one thing?" I queried. The lad is so good-natured that he never minds our mild bantering. We had returned to our house after our visit to the church and Ruth's brief organ recital, and were sitting comfortably in the downstairs room where Roger caught his first glimpse of the spirit world. "What is it that puzzles you, my dear fellow? State your case, as the lawyers say, and perhaps Ruth or I can throw some light on the matter." "It's this: how is it that everybody looks so young? I've not seen any old people anywhere." "Oh, yes, you have, Roger, but not in the way you mean, of course. If I'm being too personal, Monsignor, tell me to mind my own business. But what would your age be?" You need have no fear about being too personal, my dear boy, in this matter of ages. We're not the least touchy over here. Even Ruth won't mind your asking such a question, and as you may know, the women folk on Earth are sometimes a little sensitive on the subject. But here, no one cares, because one ceases to give the thing much thought. Still, it has its interesting side, especially to people like you and me, Roger and Ruth, two who like to look into things a bit. Well, now, as to my age. When I came over here I was 43, and I've been here for 37 years. I know that because I have active interests in the old Earth, and so have kept track of the passage of time. So, then, a simple sum, and you have the answer. Good gracious, the boy exclaimed. Then you're 80. Just so, a young man of 80. But you don't look anywhere near it. I hope not. As a matter of fact, I scarcely look any different from what I appeared to be when I arrived here. A few alterations for the better, perhaps, but otherwise, no change. And how old would you say I am, Roger? Asked Truth. Careful, Roger, I interposed, but he would not venture a guess. If you had said 100 it wouldn't have upset me in the least. But I'm not that yet. Put it at about 62, and you will be right. You don't look a minute older than about 25, returned Roger. Which was just my age when I came here. Then what on earth age must I look? Hardly beyond an infant in arms, laughed Truth. No, Roger, you look the same as you looked on Earth, as far as age goes. In health, of course, vastly different, at any rate from those last few days. Poor dear, you were a very ill Roger then, but there's no comparison now. Your mother would see in you now the lad she used to know. You see how it is, I said. In the spirit world age in years doesn't count. What happens is that the period known as the prime of life is the normal and permanent age. If one arrives here before that time, as you did and as many other do, even tiny infants, then you proceed gradually towards that prime of life, and there you remain. If you should come here after you've reached it, one may have gone far past it into the 80s and higher, then you revert, you return to the prime of life. In other words, you become younger. That seems a sound idea. It is a sound idea, but then all the ideas here are sound. We joined in laughter at our own condescending approval of the spirit world. Still, Roger, I continued, for all our fun, the law that brings it about is a just one. And that's what you really meant. It's just in every way, for those who have passed the prescribed span on Earth and for those who left it in early or very early infancy, or when they were your age, or Ruth's, and if it comes to that, mine as well almost. But I'll tell you one thing, you will find it extremely difficult to guess a person's right age, which is to say, how long they have been in the spirit world, with the addition of the few years lived on Earth. The longer you've lived in these lands, the shorter does the earthly period seem to become by comparison. Take Radiant Wing, for example. You couldn't possibly guess how long he has been here. If you had a little more knowledge, which, of course, will come to you as you go along, there would be certain indications that would help you in your guess. No, I couldn't fathom how long he's been here. He looks in his prime a young man. Yet when he speaks, and when you look at him closely, you can see that, without appearing old or elderly in any way, there is something that suggests weight of knowledge, or something like that. Difficult to define, Roger, very. There's many an occasion, on seeing someone here, that you might say to yourself, if you should ever be so disrespectful, he's no chicken. But there would be nothing to indicate positive agedness in such outward signs as wrinkles and lines, and all the other familiar landmarks of passing. Or past years. How old would you say Radiant Wing is? I can't hope to guess. He's turned 600. It's amazing, isn't it? Not really. You remember Romaya is 2000 if he's a day. His Egyptian aid is even older, in the region of 5000 years. What is it the psalmist says? Longitudinarum replubuam. Means, I will fill him with length of days. This is an ageless world, Roger. And some of us, at any rate, would appear to be the same. No lined faces, no white or graying hair, no suggestions of that additional weight with which on Earth we manage to burden ourselves, or on the other hand, no indications of shriveling up and wasting away, no slowing down of our movements, or alterations in the pitch of our voices, no loss of mental vigor. No second childhood. Eliminate this melancholy catalogue, and you have us as we are, restored to a second prime, those of us that need it, instead of advancing into a second childhood. How old would you say the spirit world is, Monsignor? My dear fellow, that is a question. You know what is said, eternity can have no beginning. And eternity, as with immortality, is something that cannot be proved. The only thing you can do in this particular instance, is to try to find out what is the consensus of opinion on the matter, and there you will find that we're all of one mind, and that is that this world and ourselves with it, are eternal. We have the feeling of absolute permanence. If it were not permanent, then what is the use of all this? What is the use of continuing at all? No, my boy, everything here in these lands cries out against there being an end to this glorious life, and the still better life that lies in front of every one of us. And we, in these realms, have the assurance did we need it of those stupendous souls in the very highest realms. If they are not telling us the truth, which is an infamous and preposterous supposition, then there is no truth. But we have our own powers, Roger. There's that to be considered. We can ourselves create. You've not seen us really on the job, yet, doing that. Wait till you see one of the experts running up a house for someone to live in, and as with a house, so with a palace or anything still larger. We make all this for ourselves with that power that comes from the great source. Doubtless, you might argue, suppose the great source cut off the power, withheld it, what then? That idea is equally preposterous. The power has been sent down ever since the spirit world existed. And that brings us back where we started. There does come a time when figures cease to have much significance for the ordinary person. When you contemplate the astronomical proportions into which the nation's finances have developed, when money is reckoned in thousands of millions, these figures can convey nothing whatever to the average mind. It's doubtful if they convey much to the people who are responsible for them. At any rate, the Earth folk are now accustomed to such rows of almost unending digits, that when universal ages are brought in, they should cause no surprise. The most one could say, Roger, in answer to your question as to the age of the spirit world, is that it existed before the Earth world. That we know from high sources. Well, then, if the Earth first came into being between 3,000 and 5,000 million years ago, as it has been computed, then that figure may convey something to your mind. I'm rather afraid it won't. It doesn't to me. Nor to me, said Ruth. Just so. All it can do is to suggest a gargantuan number of years. If the spirit world were in existence so long ago as that and we have every assurance that it was then there are existing people in these lands, somewhere, who can claim at least the gigantic number of years as their age. And that makes the rest of us seem like what? A grain of sand in a whole vast desert of comparative spiritual stature. This is staggering, Monsignor. Yes, Roger, if you allow it to be, but the truth of the matter is, in practice, we don't. It's breathtaking when regarded in a row of figures, in thousands of millions, but what seems to me the most shattering and crushing of all, is the knowledge, upon universal proportions, of those personages I spoke about. You've not met or spoken with one yet, Roger. Ruth and I have, in common and in company with many others in these lands. We have even visited the high abode of the greatest of them all. The time will certainly come when you will have that privilege, too, Roger, here in these very realms, even in this very house. Omiya is himself in personal attendance upon him, is, in fact, his right hand. You see what you've brought on your young head by asking a simple question. I realize now it was a foolish thing to ask. Oh, no, my dear fellow, by no means. The difficulty is to find an answer, and it's right you should satisfy your mind, as far as possible, upon things as they occur to you. There is, as you will guess, an enormous amount of things that are not told us not because they are deep secrets, but because we have much to learn first. The fact is, that with our necessarily limited knowledge and powers of comprehension, we should fail to understand them in our present state of advancement. It is like your school books, Roger. You were obliged to start at the beginning. A peep at the end of them would reveal things far beyond your then capabilities, and so would convey no meaning whatever. We are in no different case here as regards innumerable problems or questions. So we jog along, and find we're none the worse off for not knowing the answers. Everything fits into its proper place in these lands, and none of us would be handicapped in our progression by lack of knowledge. The knowledge will be there at the right moment. In the meantime, there's no harm in our having as many discussions as we like among ourselves as we're doing at this minute. If it's possible for us to have light thrown upon them subject to the limitations I have mentioned, then the light will come, you can be sure of that. This is a sensible world, Roger, as you will have gathered, though if some Earth folk were to be relied upon, or believed, in their wild fantastic notions, this would be one of the silliest places in the universe. How would you like to exchange this life for one that has all the appearances of a long continual Sunday? I should hate it. So would we all. But there are people on Earth who regard that mode of existence as being the very height of spiritual felicity, paradise, in fact. There is another point about this longevity of the spirit world and the prime of life. And that is, some of us would tend to change rather in outward appearance if by chance we should be old or elderly when we came to the spirit world. On the other hand, there has been very little change in both Ruth and me, on account of our respective ages at transition. You, Roger, will naturally move onwards towards the prime of life period, and some change will no doubt take place. Not much, but some. The prevailing earthly fashions or modes would have some little effect, at any rate in men, for there have been times on earth when bearded gentry were the rule. Now you may have noticed we don't indulge in such facial adornments here, though if you wished to grow a patriarchal beard down to your waist, or any other kind, there is nothing whatever to prevent you. There's no law aging it, it might require some considerable courage. Certain of our friends might make very pointed remarks if I were to cultivate any facial decorations. I should, for one, said Ruth. Which I should at once ascribe to pure envy. You can see, Roger, how it is. Identity isn't lost, but it certainly can become obscured, as you might say. The man or woman when he is old looks very different from when he was young, and the man with a beard looks vastly changed without it. And those changes are not long in taking place. One soon shakes off the physical characteristics that belong to the earthly side of life, and puts on the spirit world personality. Thereafter, longevity makes no difference. Take the comparative ages of Omar and his aide, there's a difference between them that can be reckoned as 3,000 years of earthly time. Could you honestly say which of the two the elder is? No, Monsignor, impossible. It is the same with millions more of us. What would happen in the case of people whose features are very well known on Earth? Do you mean historical figures or contemporary? I was thinking of both. In the case of historical people, there are all sorts of factors. One is that there may happen to be no accurate picture of them on Earth to which reference can be made. Artists have tried at different times, and built up some semblance from records containing a description of the particular person. Most of them are inaccurate, the pictures, I mean. So that you might find yourself talking to people here, and be totally unaware of the fact that on Earth they were once very famous people. Their identity has, in such cases, become completely submerged, as far as externals go. Of course, the person himself is still that person, although greatly improved, as we all hope to be. The old painters did their best, and turned out faces that were at least human, which is more than can be said of so many of the present earthly painters. But the originals have changed beyond all recognition. What, after all, is earthly fame, of one sort and another? It depends upon what the fame rests. It is possible to see on the earth at present many whose fame rests upon a reputation of utter fatuity. That's not so much their fault as that of the empty-headed people who give them such generous support. There are people, too, whose earthly reputation and fame were of a very unsavory kind, but who have since risen to the realms of light, and are profoundly glad that their portraits on Earth are inaccurate delineations. Recognition, therefore, fails in these lands. 10. A lesson in creation. How, I asked Trodya, would you regard this house and everything that's in it, and all that you can see from these windows, as something pretty solid? I certainly should, he answered. Why do you ask? Because, my dear fellow, there are people on Earth who will have it that all this is a condition built by thought, and therefore having no concrete existence, as they would term it. Odd, isn't it? I think I can understand it, in a way, said Roger, because when I woke up on your couch, it did occur to me that it might be a dream. Then what happened? Well, I saw you sitting at the foot of the couch, and there was Ruth at my side, and you spoke sense. Thank goodness for that. You know what I mean. We laughed at the boy's confusion. Of course, Roger. You mean that the whole situation was sensible, and not the sort of crazy things that usually happen in dreams. Yes, that's it. At once it was all very real. You remember I put my foot on the ground. After that there could be no suggestion that everything here is not real and solid. Real and solid, Roger, that is the vital point. The trouble would seem to be that folk on Earth have not yet fully realized the true significance of the power of thought. Within limits they have some idea, and a good idea, but it's my opinion that they don't carry the matter far enough. Take your mind back to the time when Ruth and I came into your bedroom on Earth. We just came in, as it were. Nothing was solid to us. The walls meant nothing. And we meant nothing to you as yet. Even when you did see us, we were pretty unsubstantial. The whole of these lands were as yet invisible to you, though you did begin by seeing us. Then what happened? One life ended for you there, and another began in your bedroom, or to be precise, in the spot where your room was situated, and we took charge of you for the time being. Had you remained awake, it was Ruth put you into a nice little nap. You would have seen what we two saw, a vapor room, with rather vapor people in it. We could have said with similar justification, that the room was only a condition, and not a state. But we know differently. That room was real and solid to your folks there in it. You had changed your condition, from earthly to spirit life, but you had not turned yourself into a state, nor had we done it for you. You see what I mean? Now, had you anything in mind about a future life? No, you've told us you hadn't, so that you could not have found yourself in some kind of thought creation of your own, based upon what you supposed the spirit world to be. No, but couldn't I have found myself in some kind of state or condition that someone else had created? Well said, my lad. That's precisely what did take place. So that, to use definite terms, it must be a solid type of place that others can see and feel and experience and enjoy. Then where comes the difference between this and the earth? The difference lies in the fact that here there is no solid earth condition to interpose itself between us and our thoughts. Whatever is created or made on earth has to be thought about first, planned. Perhaps drawings made if it is something a bit elaborate, and then fashioned by machinery or by hand, as the case may be. Here we dispense with the intermediaries, as it were, and let thought do the job, which it does very capably. Thought has direct action here. That's where the real difficulty is. Because thought had such direct action, folk on Earth think that the results must be intangible, dreamlike, and capable of being, or liable to be, dispersed upon the slightest provocation, or upon none at all. Our thoughts in these lands have far greater power and scope than on Earth. To make things concrete on Earth, one had to get past the thinking stage. Here one is always in the thinking stage because that is the last stage, if you follow me. Immediately upon the thought there follows the concrete article. I don't mean for one moment that we merely think of what we need or desire, and hey presto, there it is. Dear me, no. This house, Roger, was carefully thought about, planned, and then the masons and builders got to work. But their work was performed by thought alone. There were no intermediaries in the form of the procuring of materials, and the erection of scaffolding, and so on. Those friends thought, and thought produced this very real and solid house. And here it will remain. We're not sitting on anything. We're sitting in comfortable chairs, and they are resting on the floor. This is not a thought condition we're living in, and a good thing, too.